And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. The stark reality is that nobody's getting out of here alive. Everybody dies. And loved ones are put in the uncomfortable position of dealing with financial and legal matters when emotions are running at their highest. My next guest knows this from firsthand experience. He lost his father and mother within a year of each other. And despite having a will, a living trust, and power of attorney, he discovered that many unexpected demands and requests were placed upon him. He learned that he didn't want others to experience what he had experienced during his time of grief. So he and his co-author, Sally Lamb, wrote the Ultimate Estate and Crisis Handbook, Cash Under the Mattress. Philip Giroux shared the common experience of losing both of his parents. Being a landscape architect by training and profession didn't prepare him for this loss. Furthermore, when he went looking for information on the subject, he discovered a dearth of material was available. So he and Sally Lamb decided to write a book to help others avoid the stress and confusion they experienced themselves. Joining me in the studio, welcome, Philip. How are you today?
Good morning. How are you?
Terrific. Thanks so much for being here. Now, I want to start with your own personal story, because in hindsight, you thought that you had the whole thing covered, didn't you? I mean, your parents had wills, they had powers of attorney, etc. And you discussed many of their wishes, particularly your mother's wishes, beforehand. But nonetheless, you were naive and discovered that so many details that were not covered with your parents. So tell us about your personal story.
My parents were very well organized, and they had the little gold box and the little silver box, and within each box there were folders, and each folder contained all the instructions of what to do on their passing. And I remember one afternoon I went up to their home, and we sat down in the kitchen, and Mom brought out the boxes and started showing me what was going on. And I thought, okay, this is great. Everything's been accounted for. And, you know, we have the name of the lawyer, and we have the name of the accountant, and the name of the stockbroker, and it seemed fine. And so when my father passed on and then my mom took over, we updated some of the materials that were in the boxes, but everything seemed to be in order. Upon her passing, all the major components of their estate was addressed, and we carried out their wishes. It was just all the material, as I like to say, under the radar screen that became a real problem, because nobody really knew how to allocate those assets and what my parents' wishes would be. And there's, it becomes a lot of second guessing, a lot of confusion, and a lot of anxiety.
Well, give us some examples of what some of those under the radar sorts of situations might be.
Well, one example was frequent flyer mileage. You know, what do we do with that? First of all, we weren't even sure they had it until we had to go through the wallets and look at the credit cards. And then we had to get the numbers, and it became a real chore with the airlines. That was one thing that we didn't think of. It was what to do with certain heirlooms that they had owned and we had grown up with, and who gets that? What to do with the pets, and how we were going to take care of her pets after their passing. We had to sit down and negotiate, you know, the kids negotiate, or the cousins and the nephews, as to who wanted what and who wanted this. And we couldn't just say, okay, this is fine, because the question came to mind, what would our mom or our father want this to be? How would they want this to be handled? So there's a lot of second guessing that went on.
I can imagine that there was. But looking at this, I mean, Philip, you could have just treated this as life lessons, and you could have moved on and just treated it as part of your life's experience. But you didn't. So what compelled you and Sally to write the book Cash Under the Mattress?
It was trying to save people a lot of grief, and also in the same vein, keeping families together. Because if things aren't written down, it creates havoc and it creates ill will, and it creates a distance between families. I mean, there's always that sort of stuff going on to some level, but it's just trying to make and minimize that in the aftermath of our parents' death.
Which is a very traumatic time. I can understand that. My guest is Philip Giroux, co-author of the book Cash Under the Mattress. So, Philip, one of the things about this subject matter that absolutely fascinates me is the fact that we're standing on the precipice of one of the greatest transfers of wealth in human history. And it's really, it's a double whammy, because as baby boomers' parents die and pass along their inheritance, and as boomer husbands die and pass along their inheritance, women will, for the first time, control more assets than any other time in history. So I guess my first question is, did you think about these demographic trends and realities when you were writing the book? And more to the point, in what way is your book ideally suited for this massive transfer of wealth?
we thought about it. We knew that there were, in our research, approximately 72 million baby boomers. And as you say, the transfer of wealth amounts to about $41 trillion. And that's a lot of wealth. We felt that transfer needed to be made in a seamless way so that it would be easy to do. And we also knew that a lot of it was going to be handled through estate planning and through accountants and attorneys. But we just needed to allocate thoughts and directions to people for getting away from the family feuds.
Well, the family feuds are, unfortunately, a byproduct of all of this. And how does the book help you to avoid some of these family feuds?
There's a page where there's 13 items listed in ways that you can avoid family feuds. And you bring people ahead of any potential loss of life through a parent, and you sit down with them. You can go ahead and label items in the house as to who gets what. If there's a conflict, you can draw straws and get people to resolve. You can put a deadline on ill will and bad feelings. If this thing isn't resolved within a 3 to 6 month period of time, then it's done. We make a decision on it. You could always bring in an outside service that could arbitrate between family members if there was such an impasse. I mean, I remember two situations. One was actually with Sally. She lived in a two-story house, and she has two other sisters, and that they each had their own room, and each day they'd go up and down the stairs, and there was a little niche at the top of the stairs with this beautiful vase. So they all had a certain emotional value attached to that. So in the process of ending the estate and the allocation of all the assets, Sally and one of the sisters had a total different fix on the value of that vase. And it became a real issue between the two of them. Because one thought it was more of this and that and the other one thought because of this value and this. And so then you have to end up bargaining, giving up something to get something. And I'd recently attended a high school reunion. And I was talking to a gentleman that lives in Maine, former schoolmate. And I was telling him about the book, and he said, you know, I just had this happen about 3 years ago when their mother died, that, again, it was a piece of heirloom, like I think it was a lamp that had been in the family for years. And so the one brother said, well, I'll take that lamp, and then you can have that lamp. Well, the major lamp was an antique worth a lot of money. The other lamp, though it was a lamp, was worth, you know, I think it could have been a Kmart special. So he goes, wait a minute. So they had to get it appraised, and they had to then say, okay, if this is worth $10,000 and this is worth $79.99, then we have to do something here. So instead of doing that in the heat of the aftermath of one's loss of parents, you want to do that ahead of time.
That makes perfect sense. My guest is Philip Giroux, who is the co-author of the book Cash Under the Mattress. For most people, the single largest asset that they own is their home. What are some of the most important things to know about the house that your parents are bequeathing to you?
Well, you want to know its status as far as it's been paid off. Where's the mortgage? Is there a second on it? Who carries that? Who holds that? You want to know also about the maintenance and the upkeep of that home. Who's doing the gardening? Who's taking care of painting it every year? Who is there a housekeeper involved that comes in? How often? Where is she? I know in my parents' home, after my mom's death, there was this old German Bavarian cuckoo clock that I grew up with. And I couldn't find it. And I'm thinking, what happened to this thing? And it so happened when I commented on it that there was a neighbor. I said, oh, yeah, your mother took it over to such and such a clocksmith who was going to repair it because the second hand got loose. And so you need to know, you know, where, who is servicing the house, who is taking care of all these issues that you don't think about because you're living it day to day. And once that stops, then you have to step in and see how you're going to maintain that house until such time as you sell it or you rent it out.
Oh, besides the home, Philip, there are also things like heirlooms, collectibles, items of personal sentiment. Sir, what are some tips about finding, cataloging, and distributing these very personal items?
Well, what we did when they weren't noted in my mother's wishes that we sat down and asked some of the relatives if they wanted this, and then we worked it out at that point. Some did, some didn't. I know that when we ended up selling the house and we had to clear everything out, there was all this leftover, some furniture, there was some cupboards, my dad in the garage had some tools, had a work shed, workbench, and I had grown up with most of this. So I just decided, okay, I'm going to rent a public storage unit and put it all in there because I just couldn't separate it. So I did, and I kept it for 6 years. I probably visited it maybe twice. So finally I said, geez, after 6 years and keeping all this stuff, I decided to go up and do a inventory and see exactly what I had done. And I opened it up, and it was dusty and moldy, and there were spiders. And I'm going, God, why did I do this? I mean, you know, it's a lot of money to store stuff. But at some point, you've transitioned beyond just the emotional aspect of your life with your parents and your family. And then you just have to see what the practical solutions are to take care of these issues. So I cleaned out a lot of stuff. I did a big garage sale, gave things to the Salvation Army, to the abusive women areas, the locations up in Ventura and Camarillo, and just finally got rid of it all.
Well, that's some sage advice from Philip Giroux, who is co-author of the book, Cash Under the Mattress. So, Philip, the tax collector comes calling even after death. And I know you're not a financial planner, you're not an accountant, you don't even pretend to be. That's not what this book is about. But what are some of the things that survivors should know before the government demands its fair share? Who are some of the key players that should always be cataloged in this book?
Well, certainly your accountant and your if you have a tax attorney, if there's somebody that is working with you, if you have any partnerships in other properties, you have to go ahead and get all your ducks in order there. Also, you may have vacation homes, you may have three or four automobiles, you may be a collector of motorcycles, and all that has to be cataloged and kept. The estate planning, I think attorney would be one person you'd want to go see. Definitely all the investments through stockbrokers or brokerage firms, you'd want to know who the contact information. In the book, we also list, you know, the email addresses, the fax, the work numbers, the cell phone numbers, everything that made possible so that you can find these people as quickly as possible.
What about the government itself? I mean, elderly parents are probably receiving Social Security benefits, maybe veterans benefits. Does your book have a place where you can contact these government agencies to let them know your parents have passed?
It has areas in the chapters where all that information can be written down so that you can contact the Social Security office, you can contact the VA, you can contact Medicare. Yes, it has all that down in it.
Which brings up an interesting point. So one of your parents or both of your parents has passed. You need death certificates to prove that they, in fact, have passed on. How many copies of a death certificate do you typically need to have?
At least seven.
Seven? Now, how come seven? Why not eight or nine or six?
I think that was what we needed because my dad worked for the city of Santa Monica. My mother worked for the U.S. government. And we had to send certificates to their pensions.
All right. My guest is Philip Giroux. Philip, let me ask you this. Your book also covers final arrangements, things like the funeral. So what are some of the key things to keep in mind before you actually need funeral and funeral service?
Well, you have to understand that you're in an emotional pretzel. And the last thing you need is to be confused. And so if you're planning to have a funeral and materials going on after the funeral, you'll want to make sure that those that are, and you're inviting, and people are coming in from out of state, they're flying in, you have to make arrangements to get those people to the chapel or to the service site. You have to make arrangements for if you're going to have a gathering after the funeral, you're going to need to figure out if it's going to be catered. You're going to have to also provide valet parking if that's the case, or provide a venue that provides that. You're also going to have to contact, if your parent was a veteran, You're also going to have to see if there was any requests for a military funeral or something pertaining to his service in the military or her service in the military. Also, the fact of when the service is being done and then people leave the service to gather for a gathering after, that people are at that site to welcome the guests coming while you're still at gravesite or at the service.
Now, one of the more interesting things that, frankly, I hadn't considered, you really do cover it all in the book, but things like the cemetery. I did not realize that you needed a deed for a cemetery plot or the gravestone or even an obit for the newspaper. Talk to us a little bit about some of those details that we just never think about.
Yeah, you want to announce, in many cases, depending on what the wishes are of the parent, but assuming that it's okay for an obit and you want to be able to put that in the papers. Maybe your father or your mother was from another city or another state. You may want to put a notice in that paper of their passing, and that also may notify relatives that you're not familiar with, that you haven't heard from. You want to make sure that the grounds, the cemetery grounds are prepped, that everything has been arranged. Transportation has been arranged, because sometimes the service is at one point and then you have to transition to a cemetery, which could be miles away, so you need to have all this taken care of. And a lot of times, if you purchase a burial insurance policy, they will include a lot of this in that policy, so that takes less worry out for you during this time.
Well, Philip, I have to share with you that I've had some sleepless nights after reading your book, because I'm concerned about my family in case something should happen to me. Talk to me about the peace of mind that your readers get by completing your workbook.
Well, they just know that they've done the best they can, and it just minimizes and eliminates a lot of unanswered questions. Because as I said, the big stuff was taken care of. We didn't have to worry about that. It's just all the stuff, all the things when you walk into your home and you look around and you see everything there has to go somewhere. And if you can just sit down, it's not an easy topic by any means. And the format of the book takes a lot of the rough edges off the topic, because it's very embracing. And it also invites members of the family to sit there with you. It's just sort of a yes, no, fill in the blank. So it doesn't take a lot of time. It just takes time to focus on it and to do it. And then once it's done, you can have other copies handed out to your siblings, handed out to your wife, handed out to other relatives. So if you're gone and something happens with your copy of the book, there are other copies out there that can help start the process of healing.
My guest is the co-author of the book Cash Under the Mattress, Philip Giroux. Philip, let me ask you, once you've completed the workbook, how often should you update it?
I would update it yearly. And I think that's just, there's things going on. There's stuff always happening. There's grandchildren. There's investment changes. There's also potential. You have to consider also that this book acts as a survival guide in case you're hit by a fire or a flood or wind damage or mudslides. So if there's been a fire and the hillsides have been ravaged, you might want to update things, because things may change and you need to just be current. So I would say at least once a year you want to look at it. Right. And I think also just in that review, it takes time. It just offers more peace of mind, saying, yeah, this was right, or, oh, I missed this, I need to change this, just as an overview.
Philip, what did you get out of writing the book Cash Under the Mattress?
I think just trying to know, I did my best to help people out. And neither Sally or I are not professionals in this field. We just saw the need to make things better for people as they go through this, and to make it easier and make the transition easier and make it more understood, because it's a difficult topic, very, very difficult topic. And we want to take the difficulty out of it. You know, too late may arrive as early as tomorrow, so we want people to be prepared.
My guest has been the author of the workbook, Cash Under the Mattress, Philip Giroux. Philip, if you've piqued the interest of some of my listeners and they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
You could go to our website. It's cashunderthemattressbook.com. We have a video there. We have information on both Sally and I and where the book can be purchased.
That is great. Philip, thank you so much for being my in-studio guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
And thank you very much, Bill.